Straw Man, The Real Story of Your Artificial Person, A Private Work by Clint, read for you by Josie. Chapter 1. Red Pill Sunday School. Part 1. Quote, "But this people who knoweth not the law are cursed." End quote. John chapter 7, verse 49, King James Bible. To preface this chapter before delving into this complex topic, I feel the need to warn the reader. I have come to the realization that there is, metaphorically if you will, a sort of mysterious spell or curse upon the Bible. It seems to affect everyone that touches it. This curse manifests in each man differently, in a multitude of differing opinions and dissonances, as the Bible seems to magically confirm or magnify exactly what the reader of it seeks to hear or believe. If one reads the Bible with the intent to disprove it as actual history, for instance, this defeatist attitude will be strengthened as the Bible stories fulfill that intent. The opposite, however, is also true, for history requires only belief, not truth. Thus, history is destroyed by non-belief, while it is exalted by those it satiates. If one reads the Bible instead like a bag of fortune cookies, seeking small snippets of wisdom in a completely unconnected story, then certainly this is what the Bible will provide. And for that one man, this found treasure, limited and disconnected as it may be, will become in his mind the whole story of the Bible. But the self-evident law of nature is clear, that the whole may never be known by just a few or even most of its parts. If one is searching for what God is according to one's already preconceived notions and after years of influence by others, then chances are that one may come away in the same imaginary state he or she arrived in, yet all the more confident of that image of idolatry without substance. And if one came to the Bible to find a justification for charging usury upon his fellow man or family member, then he may ignore the New Testament law altogether and utilize only the Old Law and Testament for his own self-aggrandizement, and he may thus justify his sin. Even the more modern translations seem to be but fallacious self-gratitudes on the part of the translators, including, of course, the King's, God's, English, Dog Latin translation of 1611. In my particular case, and in my search for the pure and untainted truth of all things, all roads while researching the legal law over many years seemed inextricably to lead straight back to the Bible, where I would, without a hitch, find the opposing law. And so, because any work is only as good as the author's intent and desire to discover the truth about his subject, I approached the Bible with my own best possible attempt at total neutrality. In other words, I learned only what the Bible was teaching by examining the intentions and meanings of its original word text instead of seeking what I wanted to hear to justify my own agenda or want. And I certainly did not keep with me what I had already been told about the Bible by so many different lovers, haters, priests, popes, charlatans, evangelists, Satanists, skeptics, and lukewarmers. And so what I found in my own purposeful neutrality was not merely wisdom, but instead what is and what will remain for the rest of my life as the very fountainhead of all true knowledge. For the Bible is not a book that one masters, but a book that allows mastery of one's true self. It is more powerful in the true self-defense than any martial art, and more full of wisdom than any library or sage. For it is indeed the book of nature's law. It is a get-out-of-the-matrix free card. But the curse remains, for what I found can only be seen by he who is untainted, whose quest is pure. The Bible is not a religion, for only men may create and partake in religion. The religions that exist today use the Bible as their justification, their furniture, and yet the Bible remains, as it were, untainted by their false doctrines and sermons. For the law of nature cannot actually be altered by man's imaginations or manipulations. Man may create even genetic modifications and chimeras in his arrogance, yet his efforts will always be confounded, as those false creations will still be bound to and suffer nature's law. For the law itself will never be altered by man's creations. That which is temporary, of man, will eventually be consumed by the forces of nature. Some call this self-evident truth as the wrath of God. Some call it fate or destiny. And yet even those technocratic madmen may seek biblical reference to such chimeric beasts where, instead of learning the lesson taught for such tinkering with the harmony and design of true creation, the foolish dream and license of how to create like a god, regardless of consequence and harm, is all they seek. Quote, "Ask, and it shall be given you. Seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. End quote. Matthew chapter 7, verse 7, King James Bible. There is but one obstacle to knowledge, and that is one's enemy. To know thy enemy, one must know thyself. If one seeks to improve one's love or hate for some exterior corporate religion in the Bible, one will find it. And if one seeks the power to become a tyrant, one may find that as well. If one seeks peace, it is there. And yet, if he seeks the art of war, it is also there. The Bible tells the story of all, of good and evil, of light and dark, and of moral rectitude and its depravity all at the same time. For to have knowledge of the truth of all things, the burden of what is the anti-knowledge of all things must also be told, or the law will stand without perspective and purpose. How can one fight evil if one cannot recognize it in all forms? Finally, we come to the two points of light, knowledge and understanding, that are furthest apart within these two extremes. Firstly, we have he who has never read the Bible, and yet very often may stand as its loudest antagonist. Like the victim of a movie critic, the fool that never seeks certainly never shall find. But chances are, he will be the most outspoken fool of the bunch. And then there is he that seeks the untainted truth in all things, no matter how it may harm his own worldview, one willing to sacrifice even the false self-image he pretends to be the truth, no matter how painful. This is the rare marauder whom, after picking the lock of the trickiest of keyholes by surpassing every pin and tumbler that stands as the most intricate of stumbling blocks to knowledge, like a thief in the night, suddenly finds that he has free range to discover what before was self-evident but not in conscious awareness. Like Dorothy in Oz, suddenly the haze is lifted, and the color of the nature of truth can begin to be seen. And someday that satisfying click of one's own mental lock being broken rings true, and the self-evidence of that collective knowledge within is seen and acknowledged to be what it truly is for the first time. This happens when no sides or opinions are left, for truth has no sides and needs no opinions to exist, as what is self-evident, self-existence. And this truth is how God is defined in the Bible, not as any man or other entity, anthropomorphized idol, but as all that is in self-existence, truth. Belief suddenly seems like a silly concept at this point, for how can one not believe in existence, in what is self-evident truth? And yet this is where our minds have been misled, to doubt the existence of true existence itself, and thus disregard its self-evident law of nature. This has been the greatest magic trick ever cast, affecting billions of people worldwide. But now it's time to unveil this illusion and correct that grand delusion it has caused. It is about here where your heart pounds as you realize that this kind of knowledge can never be lost or forgotten, that reality can never be taken from your perspective again. For what the Bible reveals is the choice to understand and meld in all of existence as the oneness of God, to fulfill the very purpose of your source of existence. And finally, when all of one's previous beliefs have been crushed by the pure and unadulterated truth, as the ego deteriorates and lays dead alongside its beloved and protected false identity, and therefore as all cognitive dissonance and disharmony disappears from one's senses, it's at this point you feel more alone than you've ever felt in your life. It's at this point when you seek to fulfill the very purpose of Bible law, which is to seek those who seek what you did, and become one again with God's nature together, to find those who've pulled themselves out of that legal matrix and government, mind control, simulation, or to help those that have already started, and those who might be willing to try. For the greatest truth of all is that no single man may be free until all men are free. Of course, the various governments and their registered, taxed, and legally anti-God, controlled, corporate religions are set up to catch most of us before we may find the God of nature and become a part of its oneness again. As pretend surrogate mothers, they provide worldly retreat instead of a spiritual reality in the cold comforts of an artificial matrix, womb, of an artificial person, of a 501 non-profit, P-R-O-P-H-E-T, and completely secular corporation, where all members are silenced by the one voice of that artificial legal persona and its doctrine and corporate bylaws. But these are not a part of nature's law, I assure you. When asked, the programmed soul will answer, I am Catholic, I am Muslim, I am Presbyterian, I am Methodist, I am Jewish, I am Mormon, I am Christian, and it goes on to infinity. These pretended identities are imprinted fictions, artful personas, lame excuses allowing the ego to be stroked into an unreasonable protectionism of that identity, while being led by the false inclusiveness felt by that victim of organized corporate religion and its culture. Yet none of these flattering titles are self-evident, self-existent truths. Not a one of these will answer as Christ has shown us by example, works, under the law of God, which is simply that I am only that I am, for the scriptures teach me to be no thing that's not of God's true and natural creation. My life and my name must not be tainted by man's unnatural inventions. Denominations, names, of incorporated religions, I assure you, are not of nature's design. Such words of the spellings of the scribes and smiths are not God's creation, and certainly not of the unwritten word, law, son. And these denominations, names, and titles are certainly not in the Bible, not even the word Catholic. And so here I am. I dedicate this work to you, to whomever's hands this work of mine may have passed into, with the hopes that you too seek only the truth of all things. I can only hope that the curse spoken of here surrounding the Bible has not tainted your ability to cogitate the knowledge I have collected within, none of which is my own, and that my rhetoric about this self-evident knowledge is not so vulgar as to turn you from the path. So let us begin here, in the realm of the gods. Quote, "For all the gods of the nations are idols." End quote. Psalms chapter 96, verse 5, King James Bible. Memorize this psalm, for it is the key to knowledge. But also remember that, as a society controlled by an artificial law built only upon empty words and symbols, our knowledge is therefore quite unreasonably limited by the depth of respect and relevance given to those words and symbols, and one of those words is the word God. A scientist or mathematician imagines that he may measure the universe through the synthesizing an equation of empty symbols, as numbers for instance, while having absolutely no actual knowledge or sensual proof of the reality and nature, source, of what exists within that so-called measured space by some scientific method, having only the understanding of the symbols he uses to calculate such a vastness of unimaginable and perpetually unending proportions that in truth cannot ever actually be known by man. For numbers don't actually exist in nature, being only the invention of man. Yet through these precise but completely empty symbols, empty forms, of the real substance, comes man-made theories of what is the real, which of course can never actually be, exist self-evidently as, truth. For in every aspect of the law of nature, source, the self-evident law is that similitude is never sameness, image is never source. Representation is never truth. Imagination is never actuality. A sum of numbers, symbols, or letters on paper is never that for which its sum represents in fiction, any more than the mirror image of anything is the source of its own reflection, artificial life. And what is called by the name of science, noun, for instance, the science of money, is certainly not now and can never actually be truth. Quote, "Science, since people must do it, is a socially embedded activity. It progresses by hunch, vision, and intuition. Much of its change through time does not record a closer approach to absolute truth, but the alteration of cultural contexts that influence it so strongly. Facts are not pure and unsullied bits of information. Culture also influences what we see and how we see it. Theories, moreover, are not inexorable inductions from facts. The most creative theories are often imaginative visions imposed upon facts. The source of imagination is also strongly cultural." End quote. Stephen Jay Gould, Introduction to The Mismeasure of Man, 1981. And so, when our ego might be subdued enough in order that our spiritual being is emergent without such constrictions of language and other art forms, we may finally acquire the most important knowledge of all, which is that we know almost nothing of what is real in the eternity of all creation as one unending being, verb. And while an actor may pretend to know his character, and an observer may pretend to know empathetically his subject, this pretended knowledge is of course always false, no matter how experimentally predictable it may be. Scientific knowledge is never a true knowledge of source, only a mutual acknowledgement, theory, of descriptions and reaction. But a theory is also never the source, only the best guess as to the nature of things. The religious belief, love, enforced syndicalist acceptance of, and the subsequent application of this false or theoretical knowledge as legally sanctioned fact or truth is the cause of virtually all of our collective problems. But what is true knowledge? Look around. With clear eyes and a pure heart, see what around you is artificial and what is of nature and the design of reality, of that which man has not touched and repurposed to his own desires and imaginations. Are you still able to recognize and distinguish that legal, commercially driven matrix from the reality it represents? Can you still feel what is real? Can you see the difference between the fictional realm of the nations and God's creation of nature? Or do you cling to your nationality, ethnicity, insisting you are some person, some thing you are not in some place that doesn't actually exist? Quote, "Assemble yourselves and come. Draw near together, ye that are escaped of the nations. They have no knowledge that set up the wood of their graven image, and pray unto a God that cannot save." End quote. Isaiah chapter 45, verse 20, King James Bible. For all the gods of the nations are idols. There are three words, the penultimate words, that by the end of this work the reader should be very clear as to their primary and secondary meanings. And so here at the beginning, let us ask about three of the most misunderstood words in all of our collective history. What does the word God mean? What do the words Jesus Christ mean? Hint, these are trick questions, each with more than just one answer. But only one answer is true and of the self-evident law of nature, while all others are only of man's fiction of religious beliefs of false doctrines and similitude. I can promise the reader two things here. One, that clarity will be forthcoming, and two, that the knowledge of the possibilities and the use of these two words is absolutely necessary to the comprehension of all systems of law and of source, nature. For these are not religious terms at all, but words of law, of jurisdiction, and authority. Religion, in the nature of reality, does not exist. Religion is a word, a noun, and like all others, only the name of one of many artful creations of man. True religious, adjective, actions, verb, however, are the epitome of all law. From custom to the strict legal code, to that which we call as the law of nature, we follow religiously, adverb, some form of law, even when that law is completely opposed to the true God, source, of nature, and thus of ourselves. And therefore, we follow some form of God as the creator and lord of whatever law we follow. But what is a God, really? As it turns out, the word God is an ambiguous term that must be qualified by its user so as to make it proprietary. The use of the word God by the transliterators of the King's Bible is meant to confuse. Adonai, A-D-O-N-A-I, Lord, Master. Strong's reference number H136. Use in the Bible. In the Old Testament, Adonai occurs 434 times. There are heavy uses of Adonai in Isaiah, e.g. Adonai Jehovah. It occurs 200 times in Ezekiel alone and appears 11 times in Daniel chapter 9. Adonai is first used in Genesis 15, verse 2. Adonai in the Septuagint, Kurios, K-U-R-I-O-S, Lord, Master. Meaning and derivation. Adonai is the verbal parallel to Yahweh and Jehovah. Adonai is plural. The singular is Adon, A-D-O-N. In reference to God, the plural Adonai is used. When the singular Adon is used, it usually refers to a human lord. Adon is used 215 times to refer to men. Occasionally in scripture and predominantly in the Psalms, the singular Adon is used to refer to God as well. As in Exodus chapter 34, verse 23, to avoid contravening the commandment, "Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain." Exodus chapter 20, verse 7. Sometimes Adonai was used as a substitute for Yahweh, YHWH. Adonai can literally be translated as, quote, my lords, both plural and possessive. Excerpt from Topical Index, The Names of God in the Old Testament, at the website blueletterbible.com. As we flip through the pages of the Bible, we see that the generic term God is transliterated in the place of Adonai. The word God is used for the vast majority of instances where either God, Jehovah, or men acting as gods are the actual meaning and intention of the word used. And so the confusion this transliteration brings to the average reader causes false but certainly understandable conclusions about the meaning and definition of this word God. This intentional design of deceit through conjugated illiteracy is exactly what one would expect from a king's translation of the Bible, for the word king is also replaced by the word God, therein by the king's own hand, so that the reader may mistake the unnatural, political, and false religious works and actions of men, playing, governing, and killing in the name of God, Adonai, with the actual existence and nature of all that is Jehovah. For when lightning strikes and floods overtake, it is the act of no false god. And when a baby is born, no false god may take credit for that creation of life. He may only copy its image and statistics, and pretend to its own artful reflection and legal personification, its straw man. And so the gods of today rule us in the stead of, anti-Jehovah. And suddenly we find in the Bible that what man arrogantly blames on God, Jehovah, all the murder, wars, and degradation towards men listed in those many verses and books, are the actions of men acting in the stead of, anti-God. The only way to truly understand the full spectrum of law is to legally understand what and who are the gods that created and executively enforce each system of it. For the only way to comprehend any creation is to know who or what created it. Be it of nature or man's fictional devices, each set of law is created, creation. Vulgarly, we may say that God creates source and man recreates fiction and technology, art, from that source of nature. God's creation, nature, is bound by the law and the laws of nature, including man. But the recreations of man know no such law, for they are not the natural design of source. And here we find the greatest dilemma of our existence, which is how to remain under the law of our own existence, source, in harmony with it, while at the same time creating and using stuff that is not of nature, God. How do we manage and control our desires and wants to create and use that which is adversarial to the very harmony of nature and our place within it? The answer to this question is to always respect natural law, the law of source, God. For while we may never actually know or fully comprehend our own source, we must at the same time protect it as our God. We must be in oneness with that source of our own life and existence, and we must treat all other parts of that whole oneness of source as the highest God under the highest source of law. This is not a law created by man's words or symbols. It is the very self-evident knowledge that all creatures already possess. But with men, the duty is much more of a necessity, if only to cause us not to destroy our very own source by causing us to observe the obvious law of its nature. As for the self-appointed legal gods of the nations and their posterity, it is the intentions of those creator gods of incorporated governments and legalistic religions that we must here uncover and acknowledge, for the only purpose of any god, creator, of any empire, is to enslave others under its own created laws within its own creation. While the highest god is the creator of men, the gods of the nations are the creators of persons, a fictional legal status in the nations. Man is of blood, but persons are only ever of words, man's recreation. This is the false, ecclesiastical, religion of all governments of all the nations of the world, for the laws of nations control only fictional, artificial persons, places, and things, nouns and names, and all the gods of the nations are idols. Yet all of them claim that the supreme being, the highest deity, the god of all gods and of nature, is their reason to artificially exist. And we buy it hook, line, and sinker, simply because we know not the word of the highest law of nature, reality, which outlaws and despises all artifices, fictions, titles, and lies of men, but especially those of the idolatrous gods of nations. In fact, the only distinction that can be made between man's legalistic law, words, and the highest law of God, nature and harmony, is that one is the law over that which is real, and the other is the pretended law over that which is only ever artificial. Thus, only by separating the moral, religious law that governs, without artifice or man's designs, the reality of nature from the amoral or purposefully immoral civil legal law over artificial persons, places, and things, nouns and names, can the legal law, fiction, overcome the natural law, reality. Only by acting in fiction can man pretend the law and laws of nature do not apply to his legal, pretended person. Thus, man religiously, satanically, follows the law of artificial things, words, over the law and duty to the reality of nature, of all true existence. And so religions, as legally incorporated ecclesiastical corporations, artificial persons, are established as fictions of law, as that which is under, not over, man's false legal law. We are unwittingly made to act adversarially, satanically, too, and place the law of God, nature, under the authority of the fictional legal law of men, the idolatrous legal gods of their own fictional creation. And so, any legally titled and registered religion or church as incorporated under man's law is in actuality completely fictional, existing only legally, artificially, as a design of men controlled by the words of men, not the word of God. For the word of God is not a language, it is the self-existent and self-evident design and law of nature. Knowledge of it comes not through words or other symbology created by men, but by the complete and utter abandonment of the authority and respect of all the fictions of men, leaving only the spiritual and sensual harmony of nature as remnant, as what remains after all lies and art forms of man are defeated. The sole purpose of these religions is to draw man away from the meaning and intent of the Bible and other scriptural tomes of history, causing men not to follow the law, word of God, religiously, but instead to follow the law of man religiously while claiming to be a member of a false corporate religion, noun. In this way, the law, word, is never fulfilled by any man, and men are kept enslaved to the legal law of fictional persons within the artful designs of all the gods of nations. Thus we are led to act legally instead of spiritually. We worship men in the symbols of nature instead of nature itself. A symbol can only be a part, or polytheism, not the whole, or monotheism. To worship nature as all life and of all self-existence and oneness, without classifying anything by valuation in money, time, or in levels of classes of importance, is to worship the nature of God and its law. In ancient wisdom, we find the concept that if all that is true of reality and of nature is God, then there is no God. God, source, need only be distinguished from the fictional and artful, technological creations of man that are in disharmony so that God may be worshipped as truth in pure faith. Without man, there would be only God, all of real creation, and nothing to challenge it. Still more important is the knowledge that the only way to escape from under the legal status and standing, understanding, of these legal gods and their artificial realm of legal and ecclesiastical jurisdiction, a word that means to say what is law by diction and to dictate what the Latin jur or English law is, to spiritually understand what the true God is compared to these godless fictions of positive law, standing in their own false deity, and to act accordingly and opposed to these institutions under the ultimate authority of God's law of nature, without respect to all other forms of the artificially created legal law of men. This is the essential hierarchy of all law. It is the choice so often spoken about but never comprehended. Good versus evil, reality versus fiction, God versus Satan, light versus darkness. And to be clear, no man may ever comprehend any form of law until the highest substance of God is acknowledged as the highest lawgiver and creator of all nature, including being the creator of all men. This will become clear and self-evident as we progress, requiring not some empty belief in any form or image of what God is, but merely an understanding of the foundations of the legal systems and matrix codes of law, as created by those noble psychopaths that believe they are God's chosen people, and that their kings and popes are actually self-proclaimed godheads, as false gods on earth. Perspective is everything, and without gaining the perspective of your enemy, you may never defeat it. The enemy will always force his own religion upon you, for then he may force his own law upon you, a law that says he is ordained by God, Jehovah, itself. Remember, the God always comes before the law, and so one's choice of God is also, consciously or unconsciously, one's choice of law. To be clear, I am not your enemy. I offer no religion or system of man's law in this work. I offer only what is the self-evident truth of all things, so that those false words and imaginary systems of law and religion, nouns, may be defeated utterly in your own mind, so that you may find your own nature and place within it again. For to find God is not to find religion, but to feel and to follow religiously the only self-evident law of nature, source, of all things, as the God of all that is in self-existence. It's not just to believe with spiritual emptiness and without works in the title or name of some image of God formed, anthropomorphized and personified by men, but instead to become and remain purely a part of nature and its highest self-evident law, to live only in self-existent truth without lies. Quote, "There is no God when there is nothing but God." End quote. Lao Tzu, or Lao Xi, Old Master, a legendary figure and thus an honorary title, said to be the founder of philosophical Taoism. The greatest enemy of man is not merely false knowledge, but the revelation of it, as the belief, love, in what is not real, and the allowance of that false knowledge to guide our actions. This is religion, in whatever form, which leads to religious, customary, or ceremonial behavior. False knowledge is the fruit of evil. It is also called Satanism, as that which is adversarial to the only truth of God, reality. If it helps the reader to personify good and evil into God and Satan, so be it. Visualization is certainly a tool of learning, though the magic of visual representations and personifications should never be allowed to have more authority or faith than the reality they represent and attempt to symbolize. The force of the organized church is strong in its doctrinal delusions that stand adversarial to Bible scriptures. But do not allow these artful images with no substance to cloud your understanding of what these words actually mean. The proper noun Satan means only that which is adversarial to Jehovah, the self-evident truth of nature, the self-evident nature of reality. The word evil, lies and artifice, means that which is adversarial to good, truth, or reality. It's not nearly as complicated as we are taught. Satan is said to be the dark king of lies. God is said to be the light of truth. But remember that these are merely the words and powers of men. No image or idol is necessary to believe in, love, God, self-existent and self-evident truth. For a picture or painting drawn of what is the unimagined fullness of Jehovah, all eternal existence, is only a snapshot of truth, and the nature of reality personified into art, lies. Existence cannot be measured in a single moment of time as singularly perspective imagery, for existence is eternal and ever-changing. No image or idol of Satan is necessary, for a picture of Satan is only the artificial version of forced truth, as lies told legally and or religiously accepted in order to hide away the nature of reality and conquer it. Satan is not at all hard to see, for the result of its persuasion and temptation is all around us as well, covering up with its art the truth of God's nature. We all live in a den of iniquity and lies. It is called the legal system, and it is seen as all that is dystopian and inharmonious with the natural design. The very belief, love, that God may be seen in some singularly imagined form of appearance and in show as the form of man's desires is what allows men to pretend to be gods. If the highest substance of God, Jehovah, is all things real, all the universe and nature and every creature within, then no artful form created by man can possibly capture that ultimate and self-existent truth of God. These images of what is unimaginable are the foundational magic of all religions, nations, and their idolatrous gods, creators, and founders. To see God, one merely need take a walk in its untainted nature. To walk with God is to walk in harmony with God's nature, reality, and to embrace it utterly without self-deception. This work is designed as evidence of this reality, God, so often hidden by the fictional matrix of man's created designs against it. It is an exposé on the legal fictions of law that serve only to challenge God's nature, design, and law. For it is only this adversarial, satanic creation and respect by men of the legalized truth of lies that gives power to the fictional things of government, and thus to the authority of government over fictional things. to live legally in spiritual death, to live in an imaginary world, jurisdiction, adversarial to one's own true nature and best interests, is the very nature of Satanism. It is a living death, the walking brain dead. And let's be clear, all creations of man's law, religious, ecclesiastical, or governmental, are only ever unnatural legal fictions, lies. But what came first, the jurisdiction, realm, or the law that's dictated and enforced within it, the chicken or the egg?
Strangely enough, the answer is neither, for one cannot fictionally exist without the other. A god must first be fictionally created in the minds of men before that magistrate may recreate and dictate its own law and assign its own jurisdiction for the use of its agents. In other words, there must be a supernatural creator before any creation of jurisdiction or law may take place. And these legal gods are only constituted by men and according to their fabled genealogy, their blood inheritance. The imaginary legal right, juris, to create, dictate, a fictional place, district, nation, state, and to become landlord, legal god, over it. This is the essence of jurisdiction. It is the creator and creation, all rolled up in one intangible fiction of art, a virtual reality. It is their sincere hope that we, the common multitude, never wake up to see the difference, to see through the spiritual blinders that they have created. The whole system of law is in fact based on the concept of false gods, the god that is the nature of true existence, and the usurper gods that are purely pretended, fictional characters of their own making. In the beginning, the legally established and ordained gods created their own fictional realm and placed it over the true realm of nature, like covering all of existence in an invisible plastic wrap, so that no common man may touch that nature of reality, except through the legal personage and rented property of the church and state. Juris, Latin, of right, of law. Black's Fourth Edition. Dictate, to order or instruct what is to be said or written, to pronounce, word by word, what is meant to be written by another. Black's Law, 4th Edition. Realm. A kingdom, a country. Black's Law, 4th Edition. Realm. Noun. Latin rex, king, whence regalis, royal. 1. A royal jurisdiction or extent of government. A kingdom. A king's dominions, as the realm of England. 2. Kingly government, as the realm of bees. Webster's 1828. Jurisdiction. Noun. Latin jurisdictio, jus, juris, law, and dictio, from dico, to pronounce. 1. The legal power of authority of doing justice in cases of complaint. The power of executing the laws and distributing justice. Thus, we speak of certain suits or actions, or the cognizance of certain crimes being within the jurisdiction of a court, that is, within the limits of their authority or commission. Inferior courts have jurisdiction of debt and trespass, or of smaller offenses. The supreme courts have jurisdiction of treason, murder, and other high crimes. Jurisdiction is secular or ecclesiastical. 2. Power of governing or legislating. The legislature of one state can exercise no jurisdiction in another. 3. The power or right of exercising authority. Nations claim exclusive jurisdiction on the sea, to the extent of a marine league from the mainland or shore. 4. The limit within which power may be exercised. Jurisdiction, in its most general sense, is the power to make, declare, or apply the law. When confined to the judiciary department, it is what we denominate through the judicial power, the right of administering justice through the laws, by the means which the laws have provided for that purpose. Jurisdiction is limited to place or territory, to persons, or to particular subjects. Webster's 1828. Subject. Contracts. The thing which is the object of an agreement. This term is used in the laws of Scotland. Bouvier's 1856. Subject. Persons. Government. An individual member of a nation, who is subject to the laws. This term is used in contradistinction to citizen, which is applied to the same individual when considering his political rights. 2. In monarchical governments, by subject is meant one who owes permanent allegiance to the monarch. Vide body politic. Bouvier's 1856. Subjection. The obligation of one or more persons to an act at the discretion or according to the judgment and will of others. Subjection is either private or public. By the former, private, is meant the subjection to the authority of private persons, as of children to their parents, of apprentices to their masters, and the like. By the latter, public, is understood the subjection to the authority of public persons. Bouvier's 1856. In man's legally driven fictional realm, we act according to what man's temporary judgment and punishment would be in a legal jurisdictional court, not by God's final judgment, not by truth. To be a subject of government is to be considered not as a living man, verb, but as a named artificial thing, noun. This is a bit confusing until we realize the difference between a man, reality, and the person, noun, legal name, of man as his legal, artful representation and identity, straw man, within that legal realm. The person is never our true self, and is always the property under contract of some devil, evil genius, and its design, art. No man is bound to man's law unless he is bound to another man or government's proprietary person. Quote, therefore the law is slacked, and judgment doth never go forth. For the wicked doth compass about the righteous, therefore wrong judgment proceedeth. End quote. Habakkuk 1 verse 4, King James Bible. Let's face facts here. If our legal identity can be stolen as what is labeled as identity theft, then obviously our legal person, identity, is not our own true and natural self. The separation of man and legal person, status, by this statement alone, should now be a self-evident truth in the mind of the reader. What can be stolen is only a property of man's fictions, never that which is in the ambiguity of self-existence. The devil's greatest magic trick was in personifying the identity of man and projecting it into a contractual obligation as a third-person, straw-man character, so as to cause that man to obey and act according to the law of legal fiction, confirmed lies, that are attached to that artificial, legal identity. But it had to be done. The direct connection to and fear of nature's God and law had to be severed in order to control us. It is the difference between Neo and Thomas Anderson, a man virtually plugged into a legally coded matrix as a simulation of reality, one so seemingly real that the man is fooled into believing he is, in love with, his false self, his mirror image, the artificial character, person, represented in that artificially coded matrix. For it is the person, vessel, avatar, that is the slave of the fictional realm, and the man is contractually bound to act in said false persona when participating in that legal realm and matrix code. He cannot be seen in the artificial legal realm without an artificial legal name and other signs and marks of traceable identity. Only when we consider ourselves as opposed to this cartoon persona as a false representation of ourselves can we contemplate reality from fiction. And so this word subject, a term of art that does not exist as a real object in nature, is only ever a fictional persona attached voluntarily to the man, via contract, as a contracted legal disease, by his imaginary acceptance of the agreement of a membership to the artifice through citizenship, etc. The person is a virtual, invisible plug connecting us to that fictional legal realm. Without a person, legal status, man cannot be seen or make an appearance therein any more than a cartoon can climb out of its artificial moving picture realm. It is only our mind that can be plugged in, nothing else. But the body will inevitably follow the mind, and so the soul is also trapped in that construct of lies in surety to evil, artifice. This is called hell. Hell is being temporary, being trapped in a mind-controlling performance debt owed to organized criminals. To be clear, man is a creation of and in God's nature, has no legal jurisdiction, and never will. Only persons legally exist there. Man, as God's creation, is not a fiction, and can never actually exist or have actual, real power in such a fictional place, though he may still be called, as the word of art, man, slave. Man does not and cannot legally exist, for what is legal can only be artificial. Man is a part of reality, Jehovah. Man is of nature, God, not legalism, fiction. A person is an unnatural creation of fiction, not part of the creation of God. Perspective alters the meaning of all words, turning their real meanings into fictional art forms. A master calls his slave as his man, and so too should all of nature, including man, recognize and call Jehovah as the only true master. Call it Mother Nature for all I care, it's just a fictional name, but only as long as your worship is based on the reality of God's nature, the masculine and the feminine in true balance, and not just the vain religions and cultural fictions of men. No life exists in fiction, no air, and no water, and no land. It is incapable of supporting life. Nothing of nature can be known as fiction, just as nothing of fiction can actually exist in the reality of nature, and so nothing under God's law of nature can possibly respect anything in that alternate fictional realm of legalism and its fictional gods. Of course, the opposite is true, for the fiction opposes and is adversarial to what is real. Reality and legal fiction are akin to the notion of God and Satan, having standing diametrically in opposition to one another. Man cannot be a fiction of law, person, any more than a fiction of law can be a man of God, for man self-evidently contains a self-existent and autonomous source and animation of life. And so a man cannot ever actually be in any legal artificial jurisdiction, for man is not artificial, and the jurisdiction of the artificial law created by man only applies to artificial fictions of that same law, nouns, names of persons, places, and things, as created by that fiction. A cartoon character can only artificially exist as art and have motion, breathe, in a cartoon setting controlled by man, in a cartoon jurisdiction, but never in reality. It has no life force, no self-existence, no life of its own. It simply cannot ever exist in or affect God's creation of nature, except in the imaginations of men's minds. Man's fictional person, citizenship, is like wearing an artificial law suit, one magically charmed, and clothing him in false appearance within that fictional world. We wear this virtual Halloween costume for one and only one purpose, to hide our true selves. And like the children at Halloween, we appear in these costumes of personhood in a court without conscious thought as to why we are doing so. Because our customs apparently say we should do so. These inventions of the law have no tangible substance, only false legalistic form and image, as descriptive words with no substance. They do not exist in nature. They are not creations of God. This oppositional state of being is not merely a religious notion. It's an obvious paradoxical impossibility in reality that stands at the foundation of all law. These two opposing realms cannot be mixed without disrespecting each other, no matter how much force is used. They cannot coexist without the dire consequences we are suffering from today. Synthesis, sin, as the mixing of the real and artificial together, causes dis-ease. Thus, when we figuratively say that God is the creator of all nature, reality, and nothing else, we need only to keep this as our vantage point to an unbreakable and highest law, so that any other recreation of man in legal artifice cannot affect our reality by causing us to believe in, love, that which is not a part of the oneness of life that is reality, God's creation. One need not believe in some image, form, or name of God to comprehend the importance and necessity in law of this distinction, for man can only be ruled by other men acting as gods if we accept the fiction and authority of their artificial realm and jurisdictions over that of God's nature of reality. The substance of the highest meaning of this word, God, is in all that exists in nature, despite man's artful forms and inventions recreated by the fictions of the I Magi nation. Again, this is not religion. This is the very foundation of law. When I say here that this is the foundation, I literally mean that no man may truly understand and comprehend the legal law unless it is compared with God's law. Both realms exist according to both laws. To deny God's realm of nature and its law, in other words, to deny what is Jehovah, is literally to deny reality. When reading the Bible, the intent of this word Jehovah must be comprehended and understood so that its meaning is undeniable, even to the ardent skeptic. The Bible is not written to give man a choice to believe in, love, Jehovah. It is written specifically to tell the story of it and its law. To be clear, the existence of existence itself, Jehovah, is simply not up for debate. To deny self-existence is a fool's errand. And yet this artful, delusional state of denial is the only way that this adversarial, opposing legal fiction realm can exist. To cause man to deny his own existence as a part of God is the ultimate self-deceit and defeat of one's body, mind, and soul. Yet the legal system's one and only weakness is that the fiction cannot exist without man, and that man cannot exist without God. Without reality, there can be no fiction. Without truth, there can be no lies. Without nature, there can be no art. Artificiality, i.e. Satan, simply cannot create reality. And so, unless man finds the light of God's nature and word, sun, law, in this story of moral allegory, we will all be consumed by the darkness of its adversary. Where there can be no true light or life at all, we will self-destruct. We will die as cut flowers, grasping in a pointless struggle for life without roots to life's source. Unfortunately, this death march includes participation in all governments, systems of law, and religions created by man. God's law of nature is nowhere to be found or practiced in any of these artful, legal, and ecclesiastical fictions, despite the fact that they are commonly pretended to be founded upon scriptural law. Their only purpose is to create mythical gods, anti-god systems, on earth that are militarily protected by their own creations of artificial law. Of these fictional creations of man, all are opposed to the nature of reality, for it is their very purpose to legalize sin and bypass the unenforceable, voluntary duties of the natural law. They seek in all members, agents, the abandonment of choice through the implementation of systematic causality. Strangely enough, this will be taken as offensive to many members of these incorporated organizations that love, believe in, their own flattering titles, and possibly to all who are citizenships, slaves of them in mammon, artificial valuation. Title equals artful, false, value. And these are all but artificial legal statuses that both benefit and protect he who subscribes to their fictions so as to break with that which is the highest or natural law and duty to all of our fellow man. When the man identifies his true self within these artificial constructs, names and titles of persons, places, and things, he can only act against his very own nature and law of creation, against his true self. He is tricked into acting agentically against his own interests and to support those of his captor. Belief in, love of, lies causes man to lie on behalf of those institutionalized fictions of man, justifying their artificial existence and protecting the fictional benefits, licenses, and false personas they provide to each of their believers, lovers, while assuming the role of its subject and acting out only its law in opposition to that of the highest law of nature. In short, man defends the evil thing, fiction, not because he is justified in doing so, but because his mind has been seized, purchased, conquered, and caused to identify with that fiction as if he, one's true self, was actually that fictional third person, as if he were a part of its body politic, corporation, and as if it were actually real.
And so any perceived attack upon the fiction is taken personally, as if calling any corporate church operating in a legalized system of mammon and tribute to the state as evil is to somehow call the man attending the church in person as evil. A useful idiot, maybe, but this is also how good men are fooled into joining the U.S. Federal District Military, by being made to believe, brainwashed, that they are part of the benefited, fictional people of the United States, instead of merely its political slaves. And so we must defend that supposedly sacred, cursed piece of paper that describes it into false existence. After all, it is where the money flows from, and it is where our name was birthed into its fictional persona. If we can be tricked into believing that we have a real stake in that legal fiction, then we can be made to protect that imaginary stake, cross, instead of pulling it up to follow Christ. We are all mercenaries in this way, protecting the fictional hand of the devil that feeds us and pays us off for looking the other way. Likewise, if we believe, love, the incorporated legal church more than we love, believe in, the Word, Son of God, we can be made to protect the church and state over nature, creation, allowing untold destruction and devastation to our own true source and home.
Like governments, religions are only constituted corporations created by legal means. They are only words on paper. And yet their buildings, altars, and the other corporate assets in Mammon make the paper fiction seem real, and even holy and sacred, while actually being cursed. But as the brave reader will discover, should his or her cognitive dissonance be defeated here at the beginning, it is the required law of these gods of fiction, of governments and religions, that only by submitting to subjection and obligation in a system of virtual slavery can these legal benefits be enjoyed by their subscribing members. Remember what the Bible says about the scribes? Quote, "And the chief priests and the scribes sought how they might take him by craft and put him to death." End quote. Mark chapter 14, verse 1, King James Bible. Remember that the story of Christ is the story of every man, and that we are all made spiritually dead under the spells of the priest class and the scribes' spellcraft. As we will discuss in more detail, we must know that all legally created persons, statuses, are dead. In other words, they are dead to Jehovah, and thus not of nature or its law. What is legal is indeed a free radical, being not of the source of or grounded in nature, and more specifically having no natural law duty to all others to cause no harm as the foundation of law. Fiction is never alive, for fiction and its law knows no actual life and exists nowhere in nature's design. And yet, from the perspective of that closed-loop legal matrix system of law, all private men not under a fictional legal personhood are also considered as nameless outlaws towards the civil legal realm. An outlaw is one not under but outside of the legal law, as one not plugged in, controllable, by that fictional code, its jurisdiction, and its agents. To be without person is to be without artificial life. To subscribe to anything is to stand under those priestly scribes and their jurisdiction, under the diction, words, of their law, juris. It is to be spiritually dead to the true law of God's nature, and to instead be thoughtlessly, commercially driven as human capital in a legal structure of capitalism, under a money-based system of mammon, artificial valuation. The pursuit of money is the pursuit of fiction, of nothingness. This is spiritual death, but also the epitome of a legal, civil life. The word craft, as used in this scripture, refers to trickery through deceit and guile as witchcraft spellings, the craft of word magic. For a scribe deals only in the authority of his own proprietary words, and a priest preaches only empty words in a public ceremony of false show. As we will learn, Words and words alone are the tools of the craft of these legal gods of governments and religions that induce all men into their sterile flocks and cause us all a spiritual death through legal means.
End of part 1, chapter 1.